The following sermon was delivered by Rabbi Joshua Davidson on Friday, March 13, 2015.
Dear friends, this week's parasha is Vayakel Pikudei. The last parasha in the book of Exodus, it tells of the building and completion of the tabernacle, the Israelites' portable sanctuary. To place these chapters in their narrative context, 2 and 3 weeks ago, we read how atop Mount Sinai, Moses receives the instructions for the building of the tabernacle and its sacred articles, the ark and the altars. But in last week's Sidra, preparing to descend the mountain, bearing the commandments in his arms, Moses discovers that the Israelites have lost faith and built a golden calf. He smashes the tablets, punishes the instigators of the idolatry, and then, emotionally exhausted, ascends the mountain again to carve a second set of tablets. In this week's reading, Moses at last conveys to the Israelites the instructions for the building of their sanctuary. What I would wish to focus on tonight is the commandment with which these building instructions begin. In the center of your handout, please take a look at Exodus chapter 35, verses 1 through 14. Moses then convoked the whole Israelite community and said to them, "These are the things that Adonai has commanded you to do. On 6 days, work may be done, but on the seventh day, you shall have a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to Adonai. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. You shall kindle no fire throughout your settlements on the Sabbath day." Moses said further to the whole community of Israelites, "This is what Adonai has commanded. Take from among you gifts to Adonai. Everyone whose heart so moves him shall bring them, gifts for Adonai, gold, silver, and copper, blue, purple, and crimson yarns, fine linen and goat's hair, tanned ram skins, dolphin skins, and acacia wood, oil for lighting, spices for the anointing oil and for the aromatic incense, lapis lazuli and other stones for setting, for the ephod and the breastpiece. And let all among you who are skilled come and make all that Adonai has commanded, the tabernacle, its tent and its covering, its clasps and its planks, its bars and its sockets, the ark and its poles, the cover and the curtain for the screen, the table and its poles, and all the utensils, and the bread of display, the lampstand for lighting, its furnishings and its lamps, and the oil for lighting." I would ask you, what two seemingly unrelated concepts are addressed in these verses? The first in the first paragraph, and the second in the second paragraph. What two seemingly unrelated concepts are addressed? Call it out if you think you know. The Sabbath in the first paragraph and in the second paragraph. Sorry? For the building of the sanctuary. So the Sabbath is addressed in the first paragraph, the tabernacle in the second paragraph. Now, in fact, this is not the first time these two concepts are juxtaposed. So now let me ask you, why might this be so? What's the intimate connection between the tabernacle and Shabbat? Shabbat is... Somebody has to say it louder. Shabbat is the tabernacle and... I didn't hear the last thing. I couldn't hear the very end. And other ideas? Yeah? Worship Okay, good. So Shabbat worship takes place in the tabernacle. That's where Shabbat worship might take place. It's a place to celebrate the Sabbath. Holy time celebrated in holy space. Now, there's a wonderful teaching about the connection between the tabernacle and Shabbat, which we need to do some digging to uncover. And we can begin by returning to the Torah's very first mention of Shabbat in Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Follow these with me. The heaven and the earth were completed in all their array. On the seventh day, God finished the work which God had been doing, and God ceased on the seventh day from all the work which God had done. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, because on it God ceased from all the work of creation which God had done. Now for a comparison, we turn back to our parasha, Exodus chapter 39, verses 32 and 43. Thus was completed all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of meeting. The Israelites did so just as Adonai had commanded Moses, so they did. And when Moses saw that they had performed all the tasks as Adonai had commanded, so they had done, Moses blessed them. Now there are very clear literary parallels between these two pericopes. Heaven and earth were completed. That's in the first selection. The tabernacle was completed. That's in the second. And God blessed. That's in the first. And Moses blessed. That's in the second. So what two great work projects are being compared with one another? The creation of the world and the creation of the tabernacle. So having established the parallel, we have to ask ourselves what lesson is being taught. And Nechama Leibovich provides a beautiful answer. Man is called upon to imitate his maker. Just as God created the world and crowned him king over it for him to dwell in, so is man called upon to use all the bounty with which God has endowed him, nature's resources, animal, vegetable, and mineral, and prepare for his presence a dwelling place on earth among the children of Israel. Leibovich goes on to suggest that during creation's first 6 days, God made heaven and earth for us to dwell upon and within. Then on the seventh day, God rested and summoned Moses to receive instructions for the tabernacle. And when that first Shabbat ended, the Israelites promptly bent their backs to the building of a sanctuary as God's dwelling place to infuse their lives with the knowledge of God's presence. In their fullest sense, this is what the sanctuary and Shabbat worship are about. Awakening in each of us an awareness of God's presence in our lives. We can find God elsewhere and at other times, to be sure. But here, now, that's what this moment and this place are for. The Israelites' desert sanctuary was certainly nothing like ours. No tabernacle conveys God's majesty better than this one. Here we experience God's transcendence in the sheer magnificence of the space, in the power of the organ and choir, and the reverent grandeur of the Union Prayer Book. Many of us who seek to believe in God need a God who transcends time and space in the moral relativism of our age, a God before whom we feel small, who commands an ethics to which we are all bound and which we transgress at our spiritual peril. There are moments when we desire only to be alone with this God, and our sanctuary allows us that. Every day, visitors from around the world come just to soak in this space and its intimation of God's majesty. Different people do connect to God in different ways, however. And often the same people relate to God differently at different moments in their lives. Just as there are occasions when we seek God's transcendence, so there are moments when we seek God's immanence, God's nearness. When broken or hurting, we seek not to be alone, but to feel God's loving embrace in and through the company of others. That too is what this sanctuary offers, and the community and worship which fill it. Last Shabbat, Rabbi Dr. Lawrence Hoffman, who has inspired the work of Temple Emmanuel's visioning team, spoke of a revolution taking place on the corner of 65th and 5th. He meant revolution in a spiritual sense, of course, though I prefer the word evolution, a thoughtful deliberation of new ways to summon through worship both aspects of God's presence, the awesome and the intimate, and to strengthen our sense of shared and sacred community. A few approaches we might consider are on display tonight. In increasing the angle of the Bema chairs so that we see you and you see us, clergy and congregation can share more directly in the experience of worship. Leading on occasion from below the Bema, as I am now, offers me the sense of closeness that I would want to feel when I'm with you. Months ago, Cantor Corson already demonstrated that with violin and harp, clarinet and choir on the Bema, we can create a musicality no less sophisticated for its intimacy. And if our mission is to offer an experience of the divine in this sanctuary, we must acknowledge that for some, our prayer book actually distances them from God's presence. Its gendered language presenting one obstacle, others struggle with its idiom. That is why the Society for Classical Reformed Judaism has twice published updated versions of the Union Prayer Book, which feel like and adhere in most every respect to the original, but with gender-sensitive poetry and prose, and Hebrew transliterated for those who can't read it. We shouldn't hesitate to at least experiment with them, or even to create something uniquely our own. To more fully answer our own yearnings and the spiritual needs of our members who want to be here, but find their experience here incomplete, I believe we need to begin to think about worship in these new ways. But let me be clear. We will never forsake Temple Emmanuel's unique spiritual heritage. The effort is only to marry together the transcendent and the immanent, the awe-inspiring and the intimate, so that the warmth of our congregation fills the majesty of this glorious space, and it illumines our lives with even greater beauty. According to the Midrash, when the tabernacle was completed, Moses blessed Israel with these words, "Yehi ratzon shetishre shechina b'maaseh yedeichem v'hi noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu." May it be granted that the divine presence rest on the work of your hands, and the graciousness of Adonai our God be upon us. So may it be for this holy tabernacle, and for each of us who calls it home.